Welcome to Animation Mentors, What Inspires You podcast series. I'm Lucy Napier, Curriculum Director at Animation Mentor, and today we'll be joined by Enrico Casarosa, Head of Story at Pixar Animation Studios. Enrico was born and raised in Italy and later moved to New York City to study animation. Prior to joining Pixar Animation Studios in 2002, Casarosa worked as a storyboard artist at Blue Sky Studios on Ice Age and Robots. He also worked as a background designer and storyboard artist for a number of Disney Channel television series, including 101 Dalmatians and PB&J Otters. His Pixar credits include Cars, Ratatouille, Up, and the short film La Luna, which he directed. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So today we're talking about what inspires you as an artist. And I had the privilege of getting a viewing of La Luna. And congratulations. It's a beautiful, beautiful film.
Thank you so much. It's so great to hear you enjoyed it.
I wanted to start off by just talking about what inspired La Luna.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, I mean, I honestly, especially when you think about the setting and what kind of a world you want to create, that's the first thing I think about is what inspires me. What do I love? What transports me to interesting, you know, emotions and, you know, places. So the influences are many for me. I mean, I always bring the first thing I have to kind of get out is Miyazaki and how much I love his work. And, you know, who doesn't? We're very much in a, especially epics. I mean, honestly, there's a huge connection to him. You know, John Lasseter has been a really close friend of Miyazaki. So his work, you know, I grew up with. I in Italy, for some reason, they had all these, in the 80s, they had every single TV series that was in Japan was brought to Italy TV. So I saw him direct his TV series in the beginning, you know, and there was a lot of him kind of building his own voice and finding his own voice that was happening when I was growing up. So without even thinking about it, I already was gravitating toward his work because some of my favorite TV series, like Future Boy Conan, he did this wonderful Sherlock Hound, where it was a Sherlock Holmes as a dog, were some of my favorites. I didn't know who it was or if there was a connection. In the early 90s, when I, you know, really started to study animation and rediscovered, while he started making these wonderful movies at Studio Ghibli, then it all kind of connected for me. So his work, I look at, study, relook at, share with my daughter. Now it's been a whole new thing, you know. She's 4, and it's so great, you know. So he's a big, huge influence on me. And then, you know, I really thought, like, what books do I love? For example, I think literature for me, it's a big thing. So I went back and reread a lot of Italo Calvino's books. You know, he's a very famous Italian writer in Italy. He's kind of well known here too. You know, he wrote Invisible Cities, and he has such a flair for the fantastic, surreal that I always thought, even before going back to reread some of these things, we read them in high school. But before even going back to reread them, I had a feeling there's something, you know, very good and great for animation because they're kind of fantastic settings and very strange. Yeah, and also in the same way, very mundane and very based on very, you know, specific Italian settings, mm-hmm. as well, you know, and that's what inspired me in finding something that could be very fantastic and good for animation, but also trying to root it in something that is still personal and still mundane. And then the last one, I also mentioned Saint-Exupéry. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry did Little Prince, and I always loved the visual that you know, his illustrations for that book are so wonderful because the planet the prince lives is so tiny, and there's something very appealing about a little planet you can just walk around in a minute. And so that was inspiring. And interestingly enough, I found Saint-Exupéry through Miyazaki, because Miyazaki is a huge fan of his writing because he's written so much about flight. And so I also love planes. I've always loved planes. You know, we have it a little bit in the family. My dad is a travel agent, and my brother is a pilot for the airlines. So, you know, Porco Rosso, it's a movie that really kind of hit home for me with the kind of passion I have for planes. And so through Miyazaki, you know, mentioning and loving Saint-Exupéry's work about flight, you know, he's one of the most poetic writers about flight. Then I actually found The Little Prince that way, because I hadn't read The Little Prince growing up. So those are really the main three things I mentioned. And there's a huge amount of others, which, you know, you can go into cinema, you can, you know, I'm a huge Fellini, Kurosawa, avid. Again, I study them carefully. I love the filmmaking. You know, I think all of us at Pixar tend to love to kind of dissect and really analyze and analyze the genius of, you know, great directors.
What I love so much about La Luna is you personalize it so much. And as an audience member, I'm a parent, and I was so moved by how personal it was and how I could identify with each of the generations. And I just wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, it's a great way to kind of more get to the heart of the story, because then, you know, those influences can really take you to the world and the kind of style you might be looking for. But then what you want to really say kind of come, you know, for me, of course, came a little bit looking at my childhood. And the stories, of course, it was easy to connect to my growing up with my grandfather in the house, and my grandfather and my dad never quite getting along very well. So I definitely felt a lot like this little kid between these two figures. You know, even when I started storyboarding, that I was so aware of, like, I want always this kid in between them, you know. It's a lot like I felt sitting on the table. I mean, if you put a camera in when I was 11 in our dining room, you know, in our kitchen, you would be looking at me in the middle, and there'd be my dad and my grandfather on both sides. And they would talk to me, but they wouldn't talk to each other.
Wow.
So much. No, and if they did talk to each other, it wouldn't be terribly pleasant stuff. So that's something that I felt like, that uncomfortableness, I thought it would be really interesting to talk about and trying to use, because it was easy to bring it to a place of just trying to, for anyone, for a boy, to kind of just try and find his own way. You know, when someone keeps on telling you should do this or you should do that, that's such a challenge growing up, you know. So it's a little bit about finding your own independent thinking and your own way with things and your own path, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit where that core came from, you know, and that feeling of being stuck, you know. And I it's great to hear a lot of people, you know, even in our crew, some people would be really could relate to that, because they'd be like, oh, my mom and dad were a lot like that. I was always stuck in between a difficult relationship with my parents. So it's great to see that's something that, of course, I went through, it's quite easily relatable for someone else, because there's a lot of, you know, kind of more universal ways we go through some of these, you know, conflicts. And the other side of it that I always also wanted to really capture, and maybe that comes a little bit from loving movies that make me feel this way, but was just trying to give an experience of that has a sense of wonder, that has a sense of, let's put our shoes into our 7 or 8 year old selves again for 5 minutes. You know, I like entertainment that does that for me a little bit. That makes me feel like a kid. And that's what Miyazaki does so well, you know. So I think that was definitely a goal of mine, to try and tell something from the point of view of a kid and make us feel a little bit that way. And that one I tried to achieve also in a way of making a very fantastic world that you're seeing a little bit card by card. We're kind of carefully showing you what's happening, trying to, you know, entice you to come into this world. I was trying to capture a sense of wonder that way, just by slowly uncovering what is going on up here, you know.
And I was curious about what that was like to direct the animators and to inspire the animators to keep this very emotional performance and this really tight connection between the characters and this wondrous world that you create.
Directing is a lot about inspiring your crew, and I think you're getting to the right point. Is like, how do you inspire your animators, your lighting team, or any one of the teams in the actual making of? And it was really fun because we really reached for things that they hadn't seen much before. And one of the things is really going back to some of my influences. So we looked at a lot of Fellini movies, and I found immediately an interesting parallel between, for example, in La Strada, Giulietta Masina, who is Fellini's wife, plays this wonderful little kind of girl that is, you know, kind of brought into this, you know, circus-like kind of life by a pretty abusive man. But there's something, you know, in her joy for clowning and for what they're doing that it felt so much about, like, our little boy, you know. So we looked at some of those sequences because she's very shy and she's been put in her place by the world and by this. There's a harsh character right next to her, so she's very, you know, timid and but then she has this burst of joy in her eyes, which is just basic joy of like, wow, I love, I'm gonna get to be a clown. She is a clown inside, and you can see this joy and curiosity for it. So we watched that, and I thought that was exactly what we wanted with our little bambino, you know, because he's been obviously probably at home been listening to these two guys telling him do this, do that. So I felt like he would be a little bit put into his place and hunched over. But then he would have moments where maybe they're not looking, or maybe that is starting to come out, where you would see this curiosity and joy for life. So that was kind of something very subtle, and we tried to really actually also track it. I very consciously, we never wanted a smile from him. There was very, very, very small, tiny smiles, maybe to still give a feeling of curiosity throughout it, but he's not really giving you a smile until the end. I wanted that to really track that he's finally, his joy is finally coming out. So some of those things were pretty, you know, we were carefully trying, like, well, he's smiling too soon there, you know, let's tone it down because we want this smile to have all the power that it can have later. And then the other thing was just really, we watched a lot of great, you know, old Italian movies and some comedian from TV, Italian TV comedians. Massimo Troisi was one of the main ones that I showed them, like in Il Postino, and how much he gesticulated. So this gesticulating was the other thing, which was, I think, relatively, you know, not completely new to an animator. There's plenty of gesticulating that happens in every movie. But this one was the one where we could really try and use it as much as possible and really try and get also as much of an Italian feel to it as possible. You know, we looked at Troisi, comes from Naples, and Neapolitans are known even within Italy to be the most amazing at gestures. And the funny thing is, it's historical. Naples was, it was conquered by so many different countries throughout, three or four, five of the last centuries, that they could never really learn the language of whoever invaded them. So they really learned to communicate with gestures. So it's actually,
interesting.
It's really amazing. They have the most gestures. So, I mean, I even looked at videos while making this where I was like, there was a whole wonderful YouTube video of someone telling you all the gestures, and I didn't know a third of them. They get very, very specific and very interesting, you know. So we really looked for that and chances to do that and with Papa and Nonno, you know, the two guys that, of course, had to go at each other and be arguing in an entertaining way, you know, because that was the other thing. Having two people banter at each other can be annoying, you know. So we wanted it to have a flavor. You know, and even finding the tone of the dialogue was difficult. It wasn't great right away, you know. Gibberish is a real fine art. And we, you know, at first in our story reels, we always have a scratch dialogue, you know, which is temp dialogue. And at first it was actually annoying, you know, but it was me and the editor trying to sound like, you know, a grandpa and dad. So it took us a while. We tried a few different performers. Some weren't quite right. I think we found out that the ones that ended up working were really embodying the character. So we actually have Tony Fucile, which is, I'm sure, well known in, at Animation Mentor. You know, I mean, he's an amazing animator, amazing artist.
He's doing the gibberish?
He's the papa.
Ah!
Yes. And he's a big papa. You know, he's the part. He's, you know, barrel-chested, good-natured papa, you know. So we really tried different people that were doing amazing gibberish, but were in the part. They were either, like, skinny or you know what I mean? It was kind of being the character. And the same thing with Grandpa. We really tried a few people that maybe weren't, you know, were more in their 50s, and it didn't feel like an old man. So we really found Phil Sheridan as a storyteller in here in Marin, and we did auditions to find him, honestly. We looked around for a while, but he was perfect. He's a real grandpa. I keep on telling this little anecdote because it's so funny, but the first day he asked us if we should take his teeth out or not. And we were like, oh, let's try without. And everything you hear is without his teeth, you know. So
that's
a real grandpa.
Did you really heavily board this? Was this heavily boarded out for the animators?
The nice part about making a short, you just board it yourself. So you feel very much in control of what you want, which is great. You know, you don't have to tell anyone what you want. You just do it. And in my silly way at the time, I was so, this is how geeky about Miyazaki I get, but he was making Ponyo, and he was storyboarding in watercolors. He storyboarded some of Ponyo in watercolors, and everybody was like, Miyazaki's going crazy. Or at least he's trying to prove something, you know, that he still has it or something. And the storyboard book of it is beautiful because of that, you know, especially in the beginning. Of course, toward the end, you can tell there's no way you can keep up an actual production that way, you know. But in my silliness, I did some of the storyboards in watercolor, you know.
Oh.
And that a little bit was coming also from the fact that my image boards, you know, and image boards are what I sold the story with, you know. So I pitched to John Lasseter with, like, I think almost 30 images. So those were my image boards, my beat boards. So they're just really your 30 main images with which you can kind of tell the story, almost like a kid's book, you know. And so you flip through them as you tell the story. And those I did all in watercolor and pencil. And I mean, honestly, I love watercolor, and Miyazaki's one of the, you know, huge, you know, influences on that, because he always has done these beautiful image boards for his movies in watercolors, you know. And the wonderful thing about that is that you're writing with images, you know. You know, that I'm not a guy who's going to sit down and write the script. Yeah, I just, like, what do I want to see? And for a short like this, it was just kind of the right way to do it, especially, you know. So yeah, there was some storyboarding in watercolor that ended up, of course, then slowly getting into regular black and white computer. You know, we sketch on tablets here for story, and that's a really fast way to do it. But yeah, I was foolish enough at the beginning to try and do it, because I figure, hey, if you don't do it on a short, when you're going to do it, you know.
Do you find inspiration from the media, though? Was there something about working out some of those ideas in that particular media that inspired you?
Yeah, there really is. I mean, I just love, you know, I funded Sketch Crawl, which is this idea of, like, let's go out in the streets for a whole day and do a marathon of drawing. And I've always used pencil and watercolors for that. So I love it just in plein air as a quick way to travel and sketch. So that kind of seeped into my regular work and my comics. I've done comics in watercolor and pencils. It's like a way of chronicling, kind of, you know, having a visual diary. So I've loved that during traveling, and that seeped into my regular work, I think, where you start doing illustrations that way. The interesting thing is, then since everybody within the studio saw that presentation, or this is the story I want to tell, we let that really kind of inform some of our style in the 3D. Mm-hmm. So that we really scanned a lot of artwork and brought in a lot of the watercolor feel, pastel feel, actual media feel to the 3D. We knew that we didn't really have a budget for big research and development. You know, it wasn't going to be, let's find a complete new look. We knew we had the tools that Toy Story 3 had. Within that box, I wanted to make it as different looking as possible to serve also this kind of fable-like story. It made a lot of sense to try and bring this kind of storybookish, illustrative feel to it. So we really did a lot of like real media that then got scanned for mapping textures on objects, for matte paintings in the back, you know, instead of doing full-on digital paintings for our skies. Those are actual pastels done by Bill Cohn for us. So it was really fun to actually put media straight on the screen, you know. And we really used it all throughout as much as possible. And hopefully that gave it a different feel, you know. We knew that. So those watercolor beginnings gave us something to aim for and something to kind of try and apply into the 3D, you know, kind of process.
Seems like it gave it such a warmth to have that handmade media mixed in with the CG environment.
It's true, you know. I mean, there's something about the computer that you fight, which is a certain exactness and something perfect is called, you know, and there's imperfections to the way we do anything in real media. And it was really about bringing some of that, you know. The texture that you get out of a pastel on a paper will never be the same. You do it 3,000 times, you know, so there is something that I think we always fight within the computer, which is about something a little cold, a little very dimensional, but very polished. So we wanted to bring some of the warmth of real media, you know. And I think on a personal level, you know, we storyboard all day on tablets, and I'm quite happy to go home and actually have real paper, you know, and just there's something tactile, there's something satisfying that it's a little more, you know, basic, you know.
So is the work that you do at home with that basic media, that stuff that gets your hands dirty, does that inspire you during the day?
Yeah, I think so. You know, and it's very hard to bring it over to your day job on feature, for example, because there's no way that you can start storyboarding and watercolors on a feature. But this was a good opportunity to do it my own way, you know, since I had this amazing opportunity to kind of try it, you know. But also the size of it is what enables you, you know. There's no reason why I couldn't try and do as much as possible by myself and with actual media, you know.
And Miyazaki did it too, so why not?
That's right. He was trying it, you know. Yeah, he was trying it for a whole movie, which is amazing. The thing that Miyazaki did with these image boards was pretty new, you know, in the late 80s. I mean, even when he was doing TV series, he would just start doing very rough, quick drawings and putting some quick watercolor on it. And that would give you some of the idea of the main pieces that you know, main scenes that he thought would then turn into the actual, you know, fully boarded thing. There's something so inspiring about those pieces to me, because I love rough drawings. I love quick drawing. There's something very immediate. It's about quickness. It isn't about finishing things all pretty. It's all about communicating something quickly, and that's something I always, you know, appeal to me. I'm not a painter. I'm more like someone that wants to capture things quickly.
And you captured such a warmth to your film that it's very wonderful to hear where that inspiration comes from and how it comes across in your work.
Oh, I'm glad.
Thank you so much for taking this time with us today. That was an amazing conversation, and I love hearing all of the things that went into making this film.
It's really my pleasure.